to side.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Saitam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, a program where I invite questions from listeners and answer them on the basis of Swami's message. Well, this is not a program for quick fixes, but a program for sure fixes. Why not quick? Because every problem is solved only by patience and perseverance and not by a stroke of magic. Why sure? Who better than the Creator will know what is the solution for each of our problems? And Swami's solutions are not merely to get rid of the symptoms, but to deal with the root cause as well. But of course, the answering booth is not for solving problems or giving solutions alone, but even to answer questions that generally tend to bother us, isn't it? But before answering questions of any type, let us begin by offering our most loving salutations at Swami's lotus feet. The questions are inspired by Him, and the answers are given by Him too. We're starting a bit late today given the previous program got a bit extended, but before we head to the questions for this week, or question for this week, it's time for the quote of the week. The quote I'm going to read today is not from one person. There are actually three different quotes, which I'll be reading as one quote. But needless to say, they all speak of a similar theme. Just yesterday, we witnessed another grand display as part of the annual sports and cultural meet. There are simply no words, dear listeners, to express how beautiful the whole presentation was. Seeing the program, I couldn't but think of how many thousands of man-hours have gone into that presentation. As part of the broadcasting team, we were all on the side stage, and as team after team came and presented their items, all done with so much of love for Bhagwan, it felt like standing behind Swami at a seashore, and waves of love were coming and washing His feet. This yearly display of Swami's students is special certainly because it is done with so much love for Swami. But there's one more very important reason why Swami responds so overwhelmingly to this event. And this reason is an important lesson that Swami wanted every student to learn during their stay here. And that is the value of teamwork and unity. The annual sports and cultural meet is a brilliant display of devotion and teamwork more than anything else. And as Swami always asserts, where there is purity and unity, divinity is sure to be drawn. So, dear listeners, this week's quote is on teamwork. I'll spare you the names of those whose quotes I'm going to read out because there are three of them. I will just read the quote. All right. And I quote, "Teamwork is the fuel that allows common people to produce uncommon results. It is quiet understanding. It is quiet understanding, mutual confidence, sharing and forgiving. It is loyalty through good and bad times. It settles for less than perfection and makes allowances for human weaknesses. Success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failure, loyalty, and persistence." End of quote. Teamwork is the fuel that allows common people to produce uncommon results. How true is that? I remember once during a discourse, Swami quoted one of the most famous equations in algebra. Swami said, you have two entities, A and B. If you square them, you get A square and B square. But if both come together, that is, if you say A plus B the whole square, then you get A square, B square, plus a 2AB. And Swami said that 2AB is the result of unity. What we as individuals can do is so much enhanced when we do it as a team of individuals. But to be able to work as a team, what do we need? Quiet understanding, mutual confidence, sharing and forgiving, loyalty through good and bad times. And all this is quite understandable, but what was said next in the quote is what caught my attention and we must keep in mind. Learning to settle for less than perfection sometimes and making allowances for human weaknesses. Everything need not be perfect all the time. When a few individuals live in a house, when few individuals work together in an office, there's bound to be friction. Life will not necessarily be perfect, isn't it? Acknowledging and accepting this fact will give us so much more peace of mind. Yes, we must definitely strive for excellence. But to work and live together, some allowances to human weaknesses and acceptance is very important. Success is never got instantly. What comes instantly is called luck. When we are not prepared to put in the effort and wish for success, we are actually hoping to get lucky. But true success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failures, loyalty and persistence. This desire for quick fixes, shortcuts to success and bypasses to richness and luxury is the primary reason for degradation in our social, moral and spiritual lives. I think as spiritual aspirants, we most definitely have to curtail this desire for shortcuts. That's why Swami said in a discourse, if you have the three P's of purity, patience and perseverance, you will become one with me, because I have all these qualities. So dear listeners, before we head to the question of the week, let me read those lines for you one more time. Teamwork is the fuel that allows common people to produce uncommon results. It is quiet understanding, mutual confidence, sharing and forgiving. It is loyalty through good and bad times. It settles for less than perfection and makes allowances for human weaknesses. Success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failure, loyalty and persistence. The question for this week is from a regular listener from Parthi, who of course wishes to remain unnamed, but we will listen to the question in her own voice before we venture to answer it.
Om Sai Ram. A very happy new year to all. Sai Ram Prem, we the spiritual seekers believe that we carry forward our karmas, thoughts and wishes through various lifetimes till all the residual karma is wiped out. Sometimes I think that in my previous birth, I might have been a very loving and devoted dog who in this human birth is searching for his master. Weird, isn't it? Well, I want to know, is there a way which, if followed properly, can free us from the burden of this brought forward baggage? If a big no, God save us. But if the answer is yes, then please explain, because in that case, there should also be a way to ensure that we can carry forward certain baggage into our next life. Why do we live in fear? The unseen need not necessarily be dark, sad or negative. Who knows, the master might just be waiting for us. I'm sure we all wish to be with our master once again. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Thank you for that question. So it's an interesting question. The question which really stands out in what was asked is there a way, if followed properly, we can free ourselves from this burden of brought forward baggage? Well, of course, I think all of Swami's message, the spiritual teachings, the various discourses, be it devotion or knowledge or otherwise, all of it is meant to enable us to get rid of this baggage which we carry from birth to birth. The whole idea is that, of course, if you're asking for some technique, as I started this program, well, it is not necessary that we need to have quick fixes or certain methods to get everything. These are all things which Swami used to tell in discourses. He has told it many, many times. I'm just going to order it and put it in a certain manner. But this is precisely whatever Swami tells us in discourses, if we follow it diligently, be sure that you're actually doing this thing of freeing yourself from those baggages which you've been carrying from age to, from birth to birth. But before that, in reference to what you feel you were in your past, and this part is my personal opinion, I think there is a lot of wisdom in the fact that we are not allowed to carry forward memories of our past. And most of us tend to do this, give place for this curiosity, trying to look where it all began. What was our past? What were we in our past birth? What is our connection with certain family members in our previous birth? I think this is probably an unnecessary activity to go into. Because when we are talking about burdens, when you're talking about attachments, we have enough individuals in this life whom we get attached to, whom we are finding it so difficult to deal with that attachment, to let go of their the ties which bind us to them. How much more difficult it would be if we are to be given the knowledge of all the connections of our past births, or even for that matter, one previous birth. That is only going to make this whole process so much more difficult. So I think there is a lot of wisdom in the fact that we are, the memory of all our past is removed. Because what we are meant to do right now, at this moment, is pretty much free from what we were in the past or what our past connections were. So I think as individuals, we may refrain from this idea of trying to find out what we were in our past. I believe that if it is necessary for us to know our past, I think Swami will give us that knowledge as we progress, as and when it is necessary. But when it is not there, I feel it is not necessary. In fact, when Swami was speaking in a discourse, Swami was talking about all of our lifetimes and the actions which we do are like the seeds that we sow. Swami said, you sow a seed, a plant comes out of it, and then there comes many more seeds. And each of these seeds contain another tree in it, and the tree contains many more seeds. So when you have a seed in your hand, Swami said, what does it matter who the father of that seed was, or who that grandfather or great-grandfather of that seed was? It is quite pointless to find out the origin of the seed. The question that should bother you right now is how to put an end to this cycle of this seed becoming many more seeds and each of those seeds becoming more seeds. Swami said that should be the thought which is predominant in your mind. How do you put an end to this seed cycle rather than trying to find out the ancestry of the seed in your hand? So in that sense, yes, I feel we should try to avoid giving way to this curiosity to try to find out what we were in the past. And there's another reason I say that. We all have come to Swami, we all have come to know Swami. I'm sure we must have done something good in our past. This blessing is a result of good actions that we have done in our past. I'm not necessarily saying that we have done enough good to warrant this blessing. But some goodness has drawn us to Swami. Even the few good qualities that we have, the good actions that we have done, we get so attached to them and it gives way to the ego, which is the primary problem on the spiritual path. So how will it be any easier if I'm going to know all the good that I've done in my past, all the noble actions which I've done in my past, and that leading to more ego? I feel that would only make this even more complicated, as I said. So first of all, what we need to ask ourselves is, I am in this situation right now, what am I supposed to do? Right? So now coming to that question of karmic burdens, because when you talk about ties and burdens and baggage which we bring forward, what we are referring to is karmic consequences, right? We have done actions in the past and the consequences are on their way. We don't know when they're going to reach us. And those are the burdens which we talk of. And apart from the consequences of actions which we've done in the past, the other thing is, how do we respond to those consequences when they reach us? Because every response that we give becomes another action which we set in motion, which will have its own consequences, which will come to us in time, right? So the question, one question is, how do we react when the consequences reach us? Is there a way by which we can avoid the consequence of actions which have already set in motion from reaching us? And can we avoid setting in motion more actions which will further form consequences? So consequences of actions of the past and actions we perform now as reactions to those consequences, which will again create consequences. How do you put an end to the, how do you deal with these two things? So we have to see if we can escape from the consequences and also stop setting in motion more consequences. Let me put it that way. Sometimes Swami says in discourses that no one can escape karma. No one can escape from the karma which they've already set in motion. Swami would sing a very beautiful Telugu song, Karma Data Vasama. Is it possible for anybody to escape from the karma? So let us say, case one, that the consequences of actions which we've already done, we have nothing to do with them. They are anyway going to come to us and we have no way of escaping them. So at least the question is, when I'm doing actions now, can I ensure that these actions will not have consequences which will come back to me? I think I would like to explain this whole thing with a small example, or rather an analogy, which I hope will give an idea of this concept of karma and the consequences. Let us say that I am sitting here and I am making small parcels or packages. I am putting some things into that and I am posting it through a courier, let's say. And these are all self-addressed parcels. I send them out and they are going to come back to me, right? And I don't know, I don't have control over when they will come back to me. Let's say that it goes to the post office and it goes through the whole thing and then comes back to me. So each action which I do is like a self-addressed parcel, which is going to come back to me, right? So now when I say that I don't want this parcel to come back and reach me, the question is, how, what should I do to ensure that this parcel that I'm posting out does not reach me? Is there any way that I can do that, right? Now, there are two things which I put on this parcel. I might pack anything inside, but there are two things which I put. One is the from address and the other is the to address. The to address, as I said, it's a self-addressed parcel, so the to address is my own name. It's going to come back to me. The from address, of course, is again my name because I'm the one sending it out. I can ensure that I don't put a to address, right? But if there is a from address, still the parcel is going to come back to me. So if I have to ensure that this parcel does not reach me, I should make sure that there is neither a from address on it nor a to address, right? Now going back to this idea that this is equivalent to karma, let me add another point to it, that every time this parcel reaches me, the self-addressed parcel reaches me, I send out another parcel in reaction to the parcel I've got. And that is what I said, our reaction to consequences of our past actions. So this becomes like an endless cycle. Now I have to find a way of ensuring that the parcel that I send out stops reaching me. So the best way is to remove the from and to address. And you will see that the from and to address are very, very closely related. So what is this from address? When I do an action, when I say that I am the doer, that is the from address that I'm putting on this parcel. The from address is the idea of doership. I am the doer. The moment I say I am the doer of this action, it is like putting that from address. And that's why even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, Nimitta Matram Bhava Savya Sachi. He says, O Arjuna, be an instrument. Be the one who is going to dispense this destiny that Lord is giving out. You are not the doer, you are only the dispenser. So when we say don't put a from address in that parcel, what it really means is giving up this idea of doership. In life, we are in a situation. We are a mother, we are a father, we are a son. We are bound to do actions. There is no escape from doing actions. Can we do each of those actions without a sense of doership and ownership? As we have mentioned many times in this program before, with the attitude of trusteeship, I have been given this task. I am dispensing this activity which I am supposed to do, right? And performing duties just as a trustee, and consider everything as being entrusted to you. My children are entrusted to me. I have to take care of them. My parents are entrusted to me. I have to take care of them. This power and authority has been entrusted to me. I have to consider it as a duty and perform my tasks. So this giving up of this doership is removing that from address in that parcel, right? I remember a very beautiful incident which happened in Thrai Brindavan when Swami was talking about the karma and the consequences. There was this boy who had a sullen face in the gathering, and Swami looked at him and Swami said, "What's bothering you? Do you have any questions?" And then that boy asked, "Swami, if I do any bad actions, is it inescapable for me to face the consequences?" Swami said, "Yes, it will definitely come back to you." Then that boy said, "Swami, what if I do something good?" Swami said, "Yes, even the good will come back to you." And then this boy said, "Swami, even if I'm doing good actions, if it is going to come back to me, then I'll have to come back in another life to enjoy the consequences of the good actions." Swami said, "Yes, you will have to do that." And then this boy said, "Swami, then there is no end to it. Whether I'm doing good or bad, I am constantly coming back to enjoy or suffer the consequences." Swami said, "Yes. And this cycle will come to an end only if you give up this idea of doership," right? So the from address which we have to give up is doership, and this doership is what Swami refers to as kartitva, right? Kartitva is the word Swami uses. And very, very closely associated with this from address or kartitva is the feeling of enjoyership. When I say I have done this task, there is this feeling that I have to enjoy its results. When we do anything in life, we are constantly looking for repayment, right? We take care of our children, we hope the children will take care of us in future. We do help for a friend, we hope that when we are in need, the friend will come back and help. So when we are doing anything with the sense of doership, it is followed by this idea of enjoyership, or what Swami says, bhoktritva, right? So you have this idea of doership, which is the from address, because I am sending out this parcel, I am putting my name on it, and this idea of enjoyership, I have done it, so I have to enjoy the consequences of it, bhoktritva, which is the to address. So we are ensuring that when I set an action in motion, it comes back to me. And how do you deal with this idea of the to address, the bhoktritva? The simple thing which Swami says is, do your action to perfection and offer it to God. As Swami would beautifully say, sarva karma bhagavat prityartam. The meaning of this statement is very, very profound. He said, none of us can escape from action. We all have to do action. But when we do action, we have a choice to choose. What is the consequence of that action which we want? Instead of saying, I am doing this, I want rewards in return, I want recognition in return, I want power in return, I want gratitude in return, can we say prityartam? Artham means the desire or what you seek, what you want to achieve. And bhagavat prityartam, I am doing this only to attain, only to go closer to God, only to be loved by God, only to be accepted by God. The moment you say that, whatever you do, you're doing it with only one consequence in mind, that it takes you closer to God, right? With that feeling of offering. In fact, in one of the discourses, Swami said that this feeling of I am offering to God cannot be a lip service, cannot be just spoken about. It has to be felt from the heart. It has to be told purely with the idea that I am doing this only to please Swami. And when we do this, it comes along with a lot of other things. I don't think I'll have the time to go into that. But, you know, you are not looking for any kind of recognition or appreciation from anybody around, because you have not done the task for that. You have not done it for remuneration. You have not done it for promotion. You have done it to please Swami. And the only way you know whether Swami is pleased or not is a sense of self-satisfaction which cannot be taken away by anything. And it is that attitude which will ensure that this bhoktritva or this enjoyership is removed. Because the enjoyment happens at the moment the task is done, not when the consequence of the task comes back. And I think that is why we have this idea of the symbolism of the yajna, right? When we perform this yajna or this fire sacrifice, what do? We take different items and we put everything into fire. Why is it that we don't put it into any other element like water, we don't bury it, we put it into fire? Because what is put into fire cannot be retrieved. And at the end of the yajna, what do we receive from that yajna kunda or the fire, which after the fire settles down, we receive vibhuti, and vibhuti we consider as prasadam, right? So the whole idea of this offering to God, which with the symbolism of this yajna, is whatever I offer to God, it is like I offer into fire. I don't look to retrieve it from there. The only thing I receive in response to what I'm offering in the fire is that prasadam in the form of vibhuti. The moment we start doing this, we are giving up the doership, and along with that, as we give up doership, we are also giving up this feeling of I have done it, so I have to enjoy it, right? But one point which I'd like to emphasize, I mentioned it in passing, is there is no escape from doing what you're supposed to do, right? It's like, you know, if I go out and say, you know what, I've never been involved in a car accident, and somebody comes and says, oh, are you such a good driver? And I say, no, I've never driven a car, right? And that's not the point of being a perfectionist in action. Swami says, you have been put in a situation in life, you've been put in a stage in life, you have to constantly ask yourself, what is it that I have to do? It's not the question of, is it likable or unlikable? Is it something which you are fond of doing or something which... The question is, are you supposed to do that? Are you doing that? And that perfection in the action which you're supposed to do, you cannot give up, right? That is one thing which we definitely have to keep in mind. I remember there was once a convocation drama which was staged in front of Swami, where there was this employee of in a company. He was carrying the money which the company had given him for a certain task, and on the way he meets this father whose son is admitted in the hospital and who's in dire need of funds. So this man gives away the office funds, and in the process he loses his job. Then he sets up an orphanage. I'm sure many of you must have seen that drama. It's a very, it's a typical drama about a man's sacrifice. He sacrifices his career in pursuit of trying to be helpful to his fellow men. Apparently, the day before this drama, when Swami was sitting with all the actors and the teachers who were involved in the drama, suddenly Swami looked at this boy who's playing the role of this man who gives away the office money and says, but tell me, how can you give away the money which does not belong to you? Right? And Swami was very seriously asking this question. Swami said, it is not right. It was not your money in the first place to give it away. And these were actually the dialogues of the boss who gets wild with him and says, it was not your money. How can you give it away? Right? And Swami was actually asking this very same question. He said, all that is fine. You helped him and it's compassion and all of that is fine. But in the place you were, the company had entrusted you with this money, which was not your money, and it was not right on your part to give it away. Right? Of course, it was the day before the drama. Nothing could be changed. And I don't think Swami wanted the script to be changed, but Swami was trying to drive a very, very important lesson there. Sometimes our idea of what is right or what is good or what is noble might not necessarily be the right thing to do at that moment. In fact, the entire Bhagavad Gita is placed around such a predicament, right? Here was Arjuna who's saying, I can't kill my family, I can't kill my uncles, I can't kill my guru, which seemed like a very, very noble thought. But it was a noble thought which was coming in the way of what Arjuna had to do, what was Arjuna's dharma at that point. So Swami was actually emphasizing how important it is to be absolutely aware of the situation we are put in, and to constantly ask, what is the dharma at this moment? I may like doing it, I may not like doing it. This might not be the thing I would like to do left alone. But given the situation, I'm supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. And having done that to perfection, are we able to say that, Swami, I was not the doer, I was only an instrument, nimitta matram. And then say, when I am not the doer, I don't want the consequences of this. As long as it reaches you, it reaches your feet, and I get closer to you. When we do this, as I said, this self-addressed parcel that we send out, which is nothing but the karma, we ensure that the from address or the kartritva and the to address, which is the bhoktritva, is removed. And as Swami would say many, many times, these two qualities of doership and enjoyership are actually based on ahankara and mamakara, which is the sense of I and the sense of mine. The moment you start giving up doership and enjoyership, you're actually slowly eating away into this feeling of ahankara and mamakara. And that brings me to the point of, what about the parcel which has already been dispatched? When this wisdom that I should do it without the sense of doership and I should do it without the sense of enjoyership, before this wisdom comes, what about the actions which we have already done? What about the consequences of those actions? And as this ahankara and mamakara starts fading away from us, we are actually, in that sense, removing this address that we are in. The parcels which have already been sent out are not going to reach you. As somebody said, the classic example which Swami gives about karma is like an arrow which has already been shot. The prarabdha karma is equivalent to the arrow which has already been shot. And the target is actually you. You are the target for that arrow which has already been shot, right? And one of the ways to get rid of that consequence is when you remove the target itself. And the target is nothing but this feeling that I am a separate entity, this ahankara. The moment this ahankara starts dissolving, the consequences actually have nowhere to hit. And this is a process which does not happen one day. You can't say that I'm growing old, is there anything I can do in the next 1 year to ensure that all my baggages is left out? It's not like that. This happens over many, many years, many, many lifetimes. But the very fact that we've been given this opportunity to stay in Swami's presence and learn this, be sure that whether you carry any baggage or not, if this lesson is learnt now, this is certainly a baggage that you'll carry into any number of lifetimes that you go into. And yes, coming to that last part of the question that you said, why do we have to fear the unknown? Definitely we don't have to fear the unknown. The moment we are sure that the Swami who has held my hand till this point when I'm alive, what is the fear that this Swami is not going to hold my hand on the other side of this dark veil that I'm walking into? There's no question about that. And the one word explanation for this concept called faith, if you ask me, is fearlessness. If you're fearless, you're faithful. So where is the question of being scared of the unknown? I'll probably end with one small story, which is a very, very popular story. I'm sure many of you would have heard it before. There was this man who was going on a hike, and on the way in, he slips through a cliff and he falls in an abyss, and he's falling and falling. And in desperation, he starts holding at the branches which are coming off the cliff. And he holds on to one of those roots which are hanging. And he's hanging midway, holding tight to this root. And it's pitch dark, there's nobody around, so he starts shouting out. He said, "Is there anybody around? Please save me, please save me." And he hears a voice from the skies, which is the voice of God. And the voice says, "Yes, I will save you. This is God here. Let go of the branch, I will save you." Right? This is what God's voice tells him. And this man says, he looks up and says, "Is there anybody else?" Because he doesn't want to let go. And the story goes that the next day, there are some villagers who usually visit these parts of the forest. And when they come here, they see this weird sight of a man hanging from a branch just 3 feet away from the ground and holding on to the branch whole night. Because of the cold, he has frozen to death. All that was needed was to let go into the unknown, to jump into the unknown, because here was the voice of God who was saying that I am there to save you. And imagine what would have happened if he had let go, if he had fallen, what would have been the amount of faith that would have come out of that experience. But to have that experience, he needed the faith to let go into the darkness. So I think there is absolutely nothing to be scared of. And as I said, these are the ways which Swami says how this burden that we carry from birth to birth have to be let go of. And telling you again, you have to let go of you have to ensure that every parcel that you send out does not have the from address and the to address. The from address is the idea of doership and ownership, what Swami says, kartritva. And the to address is this idea that I've done my act, so I need to I want the consequences of that act. I want the fruits of my act, which is called bhoktritva. And the moment we start giving up this doership and enjoyership, the consequences of our actions don't have an address to reach. And as we give up this doership and enjoyership, Swami says, ahankaram and mamakaram, which is the feeling of I-ness and mine-ness starts fading away. So even the past actions do not have a place to reach. Or in other words, Swami would say that even if they reach, they actually stop stinging you. Because what stings us is our response. If something bad happens to me today, it's my response to it which actually makes the consequence unpalatable, isn't it? So the moment I'm accepting whatever comes to me as Swami's prasadam, once that attitude steps in, you are actually not reacting the way you would have otherwise reacted. So automatically the sting of the consequence is actually gone. So this is the way that this idea that the burden which has been carried forward has to be given up. Can you selectively give up some burdens that you've carried forward? Can you selectively carry forward unless and until you give up doership and enjoyership? Be sure that you're carrying forward everything. There is no choice that you have. Any act done with the sense of doership is going to be carried forward. And as I finally said, there is nothing to be scared of the unknown, because we know that we are walking into the darkness holding the hand of someone we can very much trust. So thank you for that question. If you have anything more to ask on the theme, you can always write to me. That brings me to the end of this program. It was a little shorter than I meant it to be. I wanted to read something else after this, but I think I'll skip that. It's time for the other programs to continue. I thank the listener for sending me that question. If any of you wish to ask me a question, you know you have to write to prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. I'll join you again next week at 11 a.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. Of course, in about half an hour to 40 minutes time, I'll be joining you for the afternoon satsang. The programs coming next are The Musings by Professor Venkatraman. We have a new episode today, followed by the Ashtotram series where Brother Raghu will come and take over. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and thank you all for your very patient listening.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.